This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here today. Democrat of the day coming up here about 4:30 is going to be Liz Olson. We've got Brett stopping on by with an interview a little bit later on. Lots to get to, including me picking some fights. I'll enjoy that. That'll come up here in a little bit. But, Patrick, let us start off with what is the new craze, the new sensation. It's what all the hip kids are doing today. It's AM 950 Wordle. Now, have you heard anything about this?
No, not one bit.
All right,
this is all about
what the heck. We'll just go with it. We've got the AM 950 calendars still good for 11 months. Yeah, and you can get one of those. Now, here's the deal. Now, we're going to give you three letters. This is the example. These are not the actual letters. This is the example. I'm going to give you like the letters C A T. Okay, you have to give us a word. In the next 2 hours, you got 2 hours to do it. Give us a word that has C, A, and T in that order in that word. You can use the word cat. You can use the word category. You can use the word catapult. You know, there's lots you can do, okay? What you can't do is give us, like, act, because that's not an order, all right? So you can't – you have to have be in the order in which I give you the letters, okay? You can submit your entry by calling Patrick here, who is just eager and plumb happy to be able to chat with you today at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You can also put your entries in via the live streams. We're broadcasting live on Facebook. And so if you go to AM 950 on Facebook or Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show on Facebook, then you can put in your entry there. You have 2 hours. We'll do this at the last segment of the show. I'll tell you who the winner is. We're going to randomly select someone who basically gets the AM 950 Wordle correct, and that person will get themselves an AM 950 calendar. Ooh-ah, ooh-ah. It's what all the hip kids are doing today. So are you ready, Patrick? Does that make any sense to you?
It makes sense to me. I've got my notes ready to go.
All right. The three letters you have to use today are G as in golf, Z as in zebra, and L as in Lima. G as in golf, Z as in zebra, and L as in Lima. Your word has to have those three letters in order. Now, yesterday was a layup. That was an easy layup. This one is a little tougher. I can come up with five words that fall into this, and they're not too difficult. But there's five words I could come across that featured G, Z, and L in that order. So, good luck. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Get your entry in, and like I said, we'll have all the correct entries. We'll randomly pick someone. They will win themselves a calendar. Now, if you would like a calendar and you just don't want to play Wordle because it's driving you crazy on your social media pages, understandable, you can do that as well. All you have to do is go to AM 950 Radio, go to the membership page, make a contribution, and help out AM 950 Radio, bringing you good quality progressive liberal radio broadcasting right here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You can go there, make a one-time donation, make a recurring donation, and you will, as a thank you, send you one of the calendars. All right? You can do it that way as well. But if you want to do the Wordle, G as in golf, Z as in zebra, L as in Lima. All right? Bing, bing, bing. I'll share my five words at the end, too, here, because I'm going to guess that most of the entries are going to fall within those five words. Most of the entries we're going to get and are going to fall within the five words. Patrick, were you here when we had Jesse Diggins on?
I was not here yet.
Oh. It's one of my favorite interviews we ever did. I just loved it. Jesse Diggins, and like I said, I mentioned this, and we'll probably, I'm going to have to try to find a way to get, for us to get this interview back on the air. Diggins became the first U.S. woman to win an individual Olympic medal in cross-country skiing. She took bronze in the women's sprint freestyle event on Tuesday. Now, you're saying, well, Matt, didn't they win gold last year? Yeah, they did. They won in the team event. It was a two-person team. But this is the first ever U.S. women to win an individual Olympic medal in cross-country skiing. She got bronze. Unbelievable. Another history-making Olympic moment from Diggins, who helped secure the first ever U.S. team gold in cross-country skiing in the 2018 Olympics in Pyeongchang. Sweden took gold, silver, and silver, with Jana Sundling coming in first, Maha Dahlqvist placing second at the Beijing Winter Olympics. But the American, Jesse Diggins, once again, becoming a first, winning that cross-country medal. And I have often said this, and right now it's not looking too good. I mean, we're kind of getting beat up out there. We're well behind in the medal count. The last thing you want the United States to do is to take things really seriously, because when we take things seriously, we have a tendency of really winning. So, yeah, Jesse Diggins, I'm loving that. Starting to take it very seriously in cross country. I'm tired of all these Scandinavian teams winning all the time. Time for the USA to go for gold. Nicely done. Once again, that's Jesse Diggins. I'm going to find that interview. I got to get that interview, and we got to put that interview back out again. That was a good interview. I felt so sorry for her. She was about to start her book tour, and the book tour basically ended up stopping because of COVID. It was a tough situation, and she was supposed to have like three book stops in Minneapolis in 2 weeks, and the next Tuesday they canceled the entire thing because of the COVID breaking out. So, good book. If you get the chance, pick up the Jesse Diggins book. It's quite a good book. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's start today more on Amir Locke. Now, there has been someone arrested, and now we understand, I think, a little bit more about what exactly was going on. There's one thing I want to correct here, but I'm also going to just take on the far-right trolls who are still trying their hardest to justify the gunning down of Amir Locke, and that should not happen. Murder charges have been filed against a 17-year-old that are revealing more details about the SWAT team raid that resulted in the death of Amir Locke. Can I stop right there and just say, you released, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are murder charges here. They're involved. This is a 17-year-old. You sent how many SWAT teams out after this kid? It's not Bonnie and Clyde, for God's sakes, but I'm kind of surprised that, you know, this one 17-year-old warranted such an aggressive stance from the Minneapolis police. The teen, who is from Minneapolis, was charged in Ramsey County District Court on Tuesday with two counts of second-degree murder. Prosecutors allege a juvenile petition filed Tuesday that he fatally shot Otis Elder during a drug transition the evening of January 10th. St. Paul police officers had arrived at the scene on Pryor Avenue to find the 38-year-old with a gunshot wound. He was taken to Regents Hospital, pronounced dead about 30 minutes later. The teen suspect, according to the petition, is the cousin of Amir Locke, the 22-year-old shot and killed by Minneapolis Police Department SWAT team at Bolero Flats on February 2nd. Locke had been sleeping on the couch of a living room in one of the three apartments units targeted by the search warrants early in the morning. Authorities had closed on the downtown Minneapolis apartment during the weeks following Elder's death. Investigators using MnDOT camera footage to track the suspect vehicle seen speeding away from the January 10th crime scene to Bolero Flats apartment building, according to the juvenile petition report against the teen. Witnesses, video footage, and criminal history tied the suspected gunman to the three units. There was one on the seventh floor where the suspect's brother lived with his girlfriend, and that was the unit in which Locke was later killed. Once again, this was not the kid, the 17-year-old kid's place. It was his brother's place, who, to my knowledge, was not the source of the, you know, was him not listed in the warrant themselves. The 14th floor apartment where the suspect did live with his mother, but that's once again seven floors up, and a 14th floor apartment, which was associated with one of the people that returned to Bolero Flats with the suspect following Elder's fatal shooting. So I need, okay, I'm a little confused here on how and why you're doing three different search warrants, okay? One of the apartments has nothing to your knowledge outside of the brother of the suspect is there. I mean, the last I checked, I don't think we send SWAT teams into individual family houses of an extended family if someone is wanted for a crime. At least I don't think we do. This one 17-year-old, there's the apartment floor, 14th floor apartment where the suspect lived, and the 7th floor apartment where his brother lived with his girlfriend, where his cousin was there visiting, sleeping on the couch. Once again, not the suspect of the search warrant, but was gunned down when a police officer saw a weapon that was legally owned by the victim and decided just to put three rounds in him because reasons. No orders to drop his gun, no orders like that. Just bang, 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 done. And once again, no one in that apartment was under suspicion of doing anything. Well, there's a brother. Well, no. No one in the apartment was guilty of anything. They might as well just come over and just bust into your house. Because I guarantee you, through 7 degrees of separation, there's probably some connection between you and one of the, you know, a suspect someplace. Did you go into the 14th floor apartment where the suspect lived first? That's another question I have. Because you would hope that you would go into the actual residence of the individual first, and to almost to a point, it seems like they went into the 7th floor apartment. This led St. Paul Police Department to request search warrants for those three units. The Minneapolis Police Department oversaw the raids. They insisted that no-knock warrants be an option, despite the St. Paul Police Department not requesting them. The petition states the officers had possible cause, pickup, and holds to arrest the suspected gunman on suspicion of murder and two of his associates on suspicion of aiding and abetting an offender after the fact. At 6:48 a.m., SWAT team quietly unlocked the door to the 7th floor unit and entered with armed officers and began to announce they were conducting a search warrant. 9 seconds later, Officer Mark Hanneman shoots Locke, who is wrapped in a blanket, having spent the night on the couch, who's holding a gun that his family says was legally owned. Body cam video shows he was not pointing the gun in the direction of any officers, nor was his finger on the trigger. Now, I want to make sure I clarify one thing. Up until this point, the initial story I'd heard was that was Locke's apartment. It wasn't. It was his cousin's apartment, but he wasn't breaking and entering. He was welcome to stay there. Hence, this is a house he was welcome to be in. He was legally there. He legally had the gun. The Bolero Flats search warrants, I need to know, did you guys go into the 14th floor first, or did you just, because you didn't want to haul your gear up, you went to the 7th floor first, hoping that the suspect was in there? Because, yeah, that was stupid. The Bolero Flats search warrants have not been made public, but reports have said Locke was not listed on the documents. The juvenile petition filed against the 17-year-old on Tuesday says the suspect's brother and his girlfriend were also in the apartment the morning the Minneapolis Police Department executed a search warrant. Investigators found a jacket the teen suspect may have been wearing when he drove the suspect vehicle to the parking ramp the day after Elder's death. In the first 14th floor unit, neither the suspect nor his mother were home at the time of the raid. Investigators found clothing and items possibly connected to Elder's killing. And in the second 14th floor apartment, officers did not locate the suspect acquaintance they were looking for, but did find another male, according to the petition. Okay. So they found someone else, I guess, wanted for another different crime. So let me get this right. You were supposed to find a 17-year-old. You have suspicion that he murdered someone. You sent him to three different apartments. There's supposed to be no knock warrants. You insisted no knock warrants. And not only did you not catch the individual, but you shot someone who had nothing to do with the crime. Wow. Welcome to the Minneapolis Police Department. The 17-year-old charged Tuesday was arrested earlier this week in Winona, police have said. The Ramsey County... Did you have a search warrant for Winona? Did the Winona police demand a no-knock search warrant? Be interested to find out that, what the circumstances of the arrest were in Winona. They are going to move to try the teen as an adult. Here's what I want to make sure I want to address. One of the things here that I want to address is today I have seen an insane amount of conservatives who, once again, their entire narrative for the 2022 election is that the Minneapolis police are perfectly fine. They don't do anything wrong. That it's all the black people's fault that get murdered by cops. It's all their fault. They deserved it. They were going to get shot. And that's just that. That's kind of one of the things. We saw that with the Dante Wright trial in Brooklyn. That was in Brooklyn Park. But we saw that with that trial where the argument was, well, he was going to do something anyway, so it's good that you shot and murdered him. I mean, that was the Republican conservative argument. Black guy, yeah, probably was going to do something anyway, so better kill him. That's kind of their mentality. Today, I have had multiple Republicans make the argument that, one, because the jacket was in the apartment, that Amir Locke deserved to be shot because the jacket was in the apartment. Wow, that is what you call a reach. The other one is that merely because he was the cousin of the suspect, not wanted for any crime, but because he was the cousin of someone who is suspected of a crime, that it was fair to murder him because reasons. I mean, that's kind of the argument that they say. Well, it's a good thing we got his cousin. Law-abiding kid, never been in trouble, legally owning a gun, was gunned down in an apartment he was supposed to be in by officers who did a no-knock warrant when they're supposed to, weren't supposed to, and was not the suspect of the crime. You know, if you just don't like black people, I get it, conservatives. I get it. You feel as if white people should control black people and Latino people and Native American people and Asian people. I see you for what you guys are. But just keep your ignorance to yourself. How about we do it that way? I know I'm not going to be able to change you because, you know, generally people like you only change when you're put on trial for a hate crime. But the reality is that I know where you're just desperate to say black guy deserved it. Well, he didn't. And even with this information we have today, nothing even comes close to justifying the gunning down of Locke. It wasn't even his apartment. That was like saying, well, he worked at an Arby's once and you got yourself a beef and cheddar one time, so we're justifying going and doing a no-knock warrant on your apartment. Matt, that's not fair. It's his brother. There's at least a family connection. He wasn't there. The people that were supposed to be there were there, and you murdered one of them because reasons. Well, because he was black. Because, like I said, there wouldn't be a conservative in this state that would be accepting what happened there to Amir Locke. A person in this state that wouldn't be accepting it if it was a white guy, that this happened to a white, you know, a white cousin of a white suspect. But at the same time, they would have done the knock warrant. Hey, fella, is the person we're looking for in there? Hey, it looks like you got a gun there. Put it down. We're not looking for trouble. We're just doing a search warrant. That's what would be if it was a white guy. They saw a black guy. They saw a gun not aimed at them, and they just took him out. Yeah, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show. More on this story when we do return. Liz Olson, representative from Duluth. She's going to join us as Democrat of the Day coming up here in just a little bit. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Hey, boy. What you say, boy? You trying to play coy?
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I should mention here as well, the Twin City students walked out of class on Tuesday to protest the killing of 22-year-old Amir Locke on February 2nd. The event, organized by Minnesota teen activists, called on students across Minnesota to wear black and walk out of school. Organizers also held a rally in St. Paul Central, and then they marched about 1.5 blocks long to the governor's mansion. Students said they demand all no-knock warrants be banned. They call for full transparency and full overhaul and demilitarization of the Minneapolis Police Department and a full review of the Minneapolis Police Department and SWAT practices. They're also calling for the Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey and interim Minneapolis Police Chief Amelia Huffman to resign, as well as Officer Mark Hanneman, who shot Locke, to be fired. And activists also want the accountability of Hennepin County Judge Peter Cahill, who reportedly signed the no-knock warrants that led to Locke's death. Let me make sure we remind people of something about the young kids of today. They have had it with us adults. They have had it. And trust me, this is coming up the line. There's a reason why Republicans are banking everything on the old people right now, because the most of the young people today have had it with the Republicans and their policies and this conservative policy. This crew is coming up. And they are not taking your advice. They're not sitting there and saying, why don't you sit back in the corner? No, 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 no. I can tell you, I got three kids. One of them age 20, one of them age 17, one of them age soon to be 15. They are tired of our crap. And they're like, why can't you get guns fixed? And you try to look at them and say, well, we can't. And they say, get them fixed. Why can't we get health care? Why can't you have accountability in the case of Amir Locke? Good luck trying to tell them. That's not going to happen. By the way, I want to make sure I mention, of course, Todd Colet, a very good friend here of the station. He is sponsoring us this week. Thank you very much, Todd. We do appreciate that. If you'd like to sponsor us, 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885 is the phone number. Give us a call. You can find out how you can do that. Todd wants everyone to head to fairfight.com. That's fairfight.com. I put a link on that last night on Twitter and Facebook. You can go there and find out how you can make sure every vote counts in the 2022 election. That's fairfight.com. Thank you very much, Todd, as well. All right. So just one quick thing here before we get into the break. And once again, Representative Liz Olson is going to be joining us here. That is the mighty 7B up in Duluth. We'll be chatting with her about things. We've had her on the air, I think, every Democrat of the day. She's shown up at least once. And it's always been a pleasure to chat with her. But, Patrick, I want to get you up to date on Wordle here. So, one, it does not have to be five letters. It can be any length of word, okay, as long as it's a legit word. We're kind of hesitant to the Polish town names we got yesterday, but it does not have to be five letters. It can be as long as the word is. It just has to have the letters G as in Gulf, Z as in zebra, L as in Lima in order. And like I said, there's five words I can think of off the top of my head. One of them is gazelle, and Gordon got gazelle in. Now, you can also, if you want to, submit gazelle, because G, Z, and L are in order in that word. You can either do that by calling Patrick. He's lonely. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Give Patrick a call. Get in your AM 950 Wordle word in with Patrick. And as well, you can also go to the Facebook live feeds at AM 950 Radio, as well as Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. Get your entries in there. And at the end of the show, of all the entries, someone will get themselves a calendar. Gordon is in. Gazelle is one of those words. But does that make sense now, Patrick? You got that completely? You were concerned. You thought all three letters had to be right next to each other in a word.
I did. As I admit, I am not into this craze. I have lots of friends who are, and then you always see my social media littered with gray, yellow, green squares all day long. But I haven't really gotten into playing yet.
Well, this is nothing like the game. We're just basically stealing this the word Wordle as a sweeps month giveaway item. So, welcome to radio. Welcome to radio. And by the way, I'm going to pick some bones with someone on this, because I hope they're not doing a sweeps month stunt, because yikes. But even if there aren't, they're still misguided. I'll get to that here in a little bit. Once again, 952-946-6205. The Facebook live streams are AM 950 Radio and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. Make your post. Let it be known. Get yourself in. Get one of the beautiful AM 950 calendars. Once again, that's still good. Still good. For 11 months.
Oh, we just had Vern from White Bear Lake put in a guess. This one will probably make you laugh and make your blood boil at the same time, Matt.
Uh-oh. Is it a certain individual's name?
Yes, it is.
And that would be?
Gazelka.
Oh, God, I don't want to accept Gazelka. I'll accept Gazelka. Give me your Gazelkas. and your gazelles. Neither one of them have any. One is a graceful creature. The other one is Paul Gazelka. So, ta-da! Radio. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Liz Olson, hopefully when we do return as Democrat of the Day, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Still the only radio show in town with the guts to air Kate Bush as my bumper music. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Joining us right now is our Democrat of the Day, representing 7B, which is a good chunk of Duluth. It's Representative Liz Olson. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about last year, the upcoming year, and her campaign. Representative, thank you very much. Nice to have you back again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. What a delight.
No, it is an absolute delight. I do want to, though, start, if I can, with a story that broke yesterday that kind of comes from your district, and just kind of get your thoughts on this. And that's that story about the young child was wearing a swimsuit that said Black Lives Matter. And she was at she wasn't in your district per se, but she was within that region at a swim meet over in Superior. Apparently, one of the volunteer judges said, oh, that's not allowed, even though apparently it was, and told her that she could not swim. Needless to say, the NAACP and the YMCA both stepped up and said, no. This is legit. She can do this and wear the swimsuit. A lot of trauma there, but a lot of people questioning how a person like that could make that decision like that. It was a kind of a rough beginning of that story, but a good conclusion there. That ended up having that girl being able to swim there. And as a matter of fact, got national attention. LeBron James, apparently, I think, gave her a call on Monday to commend her for standing up for her beliefs. Just your thoughts on what happened there.
Yeah, and I think the outcome is good. I mean, it just shows how far we still have to go, where that is seen as that someone clearly did something that was against the rules by telling her she couldn't wear it and stood by that. But good on her to have like the courage and tenacity to not back down. But unfortunately that she had to, right? Mm-hmm. She should have just been able to wear that straight away. But I was really glad to see the community in the form of the Duluth YMCA and the NAACP really rally around that, to say that, we're not going to tolerate that, not here. And really have her back. And so I think, again, like super unfortunate, just tells you really the state of the world we still live in, but also seeing the good in things too with how the community responded and came together, and just her tenacity and grit and willingness to stand up was pretty remarkable and, you know, really gave me chills when I heard about just her and the strength she has and the courage she has.
You know, and your district too, I mean, they've come to grips with some ugly moments in the past. They put out some memorials to talk about that. They're not shying away from this anymore. They really do realize as Duluth grows, it is growing in a vibrant, lovely, vibrant way. And this is the kind of growth you want to have in a city. And we don't want to go back to the times where there are one set of rules for white kids and one set of rules for everyone else. And I think that, like I said, you can't, you know, it's a tough situation. The outcome is fantastic because it does show you change has happened and people are not about to sit back and accept what used to be the norm.
That's exactly right. And a lot of people didn't know. I think in recent years, it's gotten a lot more people know about it. But Duluth is a tourist town and a ton of us, you know, even as a kid, I would go there all the time. And
yeah.
People go there, but you would go to the lift bridge, you go to the canal park, you skip some rocks. But not many people ever went to the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial or the site where a lynching happened. The lynching happened in the time that, you know, my grandfather was alive during that time. That's not that long ago. And that was nothing that we talked about as a city. We swept it under the rug. We pretended to be something we weren't. And it wasn't until just recently that the community really put up that memorial and said, in order to move forward as a community, we need to acknowledge our past. And to really atone for that and really work to not be that in the future. And so it's a lot of reckoning and it's a lot of still figuring it out and it's a lot of still getting it wrong. But I think that was a really big step in the healing we need to do is to own our past, and to own that in order to have the bright future that we can have in Duluth. And I think because of that, you see the outcome being different in the case with the girl with the swimsuit and the way the community stepped up.
Yes.
And that's the community we're called to be, and I believe we can be in Duluth.
100%, and I love Duluth. I mean, it really is just a gem up there. And I've actually got to tell you the truth. This is the time of year where I kind of wonder, like, how come every person on the Iron Range inland hasn't migrated into Duluth, because it's about a good 20 degrees warmer towards Duluth because of the lake right now. It doesn't get nearly as brutal as the Iron Range does. It's a nice little respite in these times.
Exactly. Like, people always want to know, what's the weather in Duluth when you're on the Zoom from home? I'm like, not nearly as cold as you all think. We've got the lake, but talk to me in June.
Yeah.
That's when it's not fun. Yeah, exactly.
Your committee assignments are pretty impressive. You're the vice chair of the Ways and Means, the Commerce, Finance and Policy, Housing, Finance and Policy, Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy, and Redistricting. Let's throw that one in there as well. With all those committees there, let's talk about some of the wins you had last session.
Yeah, so we divided legislature, budget, remote. I mean, there was a ton of obstacles really in our face as we went into the legislative session last year. And I really think we came out with some great things for Minnesotans. And in particular, yesterday at the House Ways and Means Committee, we reviewed the Select Committee on Racial Justice findings that had legislative solutions. And it was interesting to see how many of those we'd actually implemented last year, or had not implemented but passed, that are being implemented. I mean, we still have a long way to go. We couldn't get the Senate GOP to agree with us on a number of things, but we really did do some big things for Minnesotans in terms of equity and in some of our budgeting proposals. We had a health and human services budget that raised wages for home care workers, PCAs. We did, I could speak to a bunch of projects we did for Duluth, and there was just a lot of really good things that did come out of what could have been seen as really difficult to think you could get those kind of wins with the obstacles we had in our path.
And that's one of the tough parts. I mean, and it, you know, there was obviously you got the budget done and all that stuff. But, you know, working with the other side, I mean, I've been talking to a lot of the Democrats of the day, and a lot of them, of course, obviously not, running for their first office this time. They're established senators, established representatives. And they say that, it runs the gamut. Sometimes you think to yourself it's a no-brainer that the Republicans would jump on something like this, and they don't. But there are other times I've heard some really good success stories of, oh, no, people, when they found out that was the case, it actually had pretty good universal support, and they got that passed. You know, there are chances you can there, but there – and especially on what you're talking about, sometimes it is frustrating that, what it seems like easy layup, no-brainer bills, that sometimes they get knocked down by that Senate.
Right. That's exactly right. And it's also knowing, what's possible. And you read the situation. Like, for example, I've been carrying the Earn Sick and Safe Time legislation. That's a really hard one. The Republicans have been so wildly opposed that I knew that would be an uphill climb, and we're still beating the drum on it because it's, even more urgent now. But understanding that that's got a tough uphill climb given the makeup of the legislature. But, on the flip side, childcare, that's a workforce issue that happens in every district across the state.
Yes.
It's something we talk about. And so leaning in last year, I was able to do a bunch of work around that in our workforce committee and had bipartisan support and was able to get that across the finish line. So part of it is to reading the moment and leaning into the things that seem right. And to your point, being very hopeful that the Senate sees them as also good in the moment, but also knowing what's going to have an uphill climb. And of course, there's sometimes surprises in both, but you kind of also just have to know what's possible and know where to push.
As you look towards this year, what are, obviously you've mentioned a few things here. What are you hoping that you can get accomplished here in the upcoming session?
Well, this is something that I just cannot believe that, it's a pandemic. We're talking about workforce shortage. We're talking about all this stuff. And with the Republicans right now, just setting it up to want to do this, business stuff. And it's like, we still have people in the state of Minnesota that don't have access to a single paid day off to care for themselves or their family members during a pandemic. That is crazy. We don't have paid family and medical leave. We don't have all that. So for the House and myself, we're really prioritizing workers. That this is, if we've learned anything, it's just that we need to do something if we're going to have a workforce that's healthy and showing up and wants to go to these jobs. It's not just about the pay. It's about everything else that keeps people you know, what made people leave jobs during the pandemic, you know, their own safety, the safety of their family, their inability to find childcare, all these things that we can fix and we should do something about. And the House is going to be fighting for those. We're seeing already that being teed up, though, where the Senate's number one priority is, you know, the chamber's number one priority, which is the unemployment insurance fund, to be replenishing that, which, fine, part of the conversation, I'm sure it will be, but it can't be the only part of the conversation. This is about making sure we're investing in Minnesotans, the workers, the people that have kept us alive during this pandemic. That's so important to me and so important to our House DFL caucus.
The, you know, one of the things, too, is as you talk about paid time off, I was talking yesterday, our Democrat of the day, Liz Bolden. I had the Liz's on back to back. Liz Bolden down in Rochester. And we're talking about, you know, the child care as well. You know, we just went through this pandemic. I mean, health care, you know, paid time off, you know, helping, you know, on a completely different issue, but helping rural hospitals, which clearly have been exposed to be inadequate in a case of a pandemic. You know, child care, which has driven people not only in the child care issue, which is itself a dangerous one, but also it has affected the employment markets because people are leaving the employment markets because why work 40 hours a week if I'm just going to hand a check over to a daycare provider? You know, there are the complications there. It is frustrating that the Republicans look at all this and it's just, okay, back to tax cuts, back to business, corporation tax cuts, and, oh, let's you know, scream about, you know, crime in Minneapolis, and that's all their entire policy is. It's clear the last 2 years have exposed a lot of holes that need to be fixed, and we have the money to do it right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the opportunity is now. This is, like, incredible. We're in the second year of a biennium. We put together a state budget, and we still have the ability to do more good. And you're exactly right. Like, this whole tax cut, especially for corporations that we know did well during the pandemic, is just, like, ludicrous that is, like, what we would even be thinking about without thinking about, to your point, the child care shortage, the people that are struggling, that have been struggling, that are just jumping up and down, that have been, you know, are in crisis. And You're exactly right that there's such an opportunity here, and we need to be fighting for those things. And Liz Bolden is, you know, a total champion on the child care work, and being from Greater Minnesota. I mean, we have some just, like, stellar minds that have really great ideas that are engaging with the people most impacted to bring the solutions forward. And so that's exactly where we need to focus.
I would be remiss if I didn't bring up that redistricting committee that you're on. I find it hilarious, that Republican map. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. I mean, that was clearly their wish list, to basically try to gerrymander the living daylights out of Minnesota. That's not going to happen. How are you feeling that the redistricting is going to happen here in the state of Minnesota?
Well, I would say, like, I totally agree, like, the Republican map, and not only the map, but their process, there just was no process. They didn't have public engagement. They didn't really hold any, you know, noteworthy hearings that had public engagement. So, of course, if your process is not an open and one where you're actually hearing from Minnesotans and you have principles guiding you that are good governance principles, you're going to have a map that is, you know, essentially just them deciding. Which is obviously going to benefit them. So the House, with, you know, Chair Murphy, long history in the House, you know, knows what she's doing, put together, like, a really good process and put together a really good map that had good principles, that had public input, months and months of work. And so we put that out, but I just don't see it likely that we're going to get the Senate GOP to do any serious work on that with us. So I'm afraid we'll likely see the courts taking action as our way to get our map.
Well, and it should be noted that the courts are not going to look at the Republicans. And, I mean, they really radically changed a lot of the congressional districts to basically try to limit the amount of Democratic input into individual districts. The courts are not going to go along with that, to shift the third district as dramatically as they did in the second district, you know, trying to get the second district out of the metro area now. I mean, they're not going to, the courts are not going to go along with any of that stuff, are they?
I mean, I think that they're going to do the best. I mean, this is what is, like, so hard about our process, is when you have legislators drawing maps. So, you know, fair and balanced maps is what we're after, and I believe the courts will deliver those, and I don't believe that what we saw from the Senate, you know, or from the Republicans was any of that. Yeah. So,
considering who the this is me saying this, not you, Representative. Considering who the considering who the Republicans put in charge of that in the Senate, that wasn't coming from the Senate. I'm just going to tell you that I was looking at their committee makeup on there. This was not. I have a feeling this might have come from someone else. That's just me, though. I'm saying that, not you. All my best on that. I hope that the redistricting goes as you kind of hope there. One last quick thing I want to ask you for your district alone, because obviously vibrant district, a lot of people love Duluth. What do you want to champion this year for Duluth?
Yeah, so there's a number of things. Continue to work child care stuff in greater Minnesota is so important. That's like one of our big priorities for our city. We have the opportunity to do some really wonderful capital investment projects for our community that we have, Spirit Mountain, the Lift Bridge, other just things that are so paramount to the success of our community that we'll have hopefully the opportunity to do with the capital investment though. And then I'm going to keep doing my work on earned sick and safe time and other worker protections that we'll need to make sure we have a healthy and thriving workforce. Those are big priorities, as well as some work with the nurses to make sure we're keeping nurses at the bedside with the community. As a large employer of the hospitals, I obviously have a lot of nurses that live in my district that are really crying for help. And so those will be big focuses for me this session, and look forward to having good outcomes on those.
Amen on the nurses. My gosh, they're just absolute angels. Absolute angels, as we've seen. Liz for Duluth, right?
That's correct. Yep.
LizForDuluth.com. That is Liz Olson's webpage. If you'd like to find out more information, how you can make a donation or volunteer, you don't have to go up now, but you want to go up in the summer? Sure. It's a lovely time to go to Duluth. Go up to Duluth, volunteer a little bit, get some great food. It is a great food town. That town's getting a great reputation there. And just the beautiful scenery of Lake Superior. Go up there, door knock, help out her campaign. LizForDuluth.com, LizForDuluth.com. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. Let's make sure we keep Liz in the house over in St. Paul. Liz Olson, Representative, thank you very much. I always love chatting with you. All my best, and anytime you want to, you come on back, okay?
Thanks so much, Matt. Really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Liz Olson is the Democrat representing 7B and Democrat of the Day. Let's take a break. Come on back. Minnesota Coronavirus Update. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Walker Orenstein is going to join from MNPO, is going to join Brett here in a little bit to talk about no-knock warrants. That's coming up next, and we'll spotlight Liz Olson for sure. For goodness sakes, of course we're spotlighting her. My goodness, the coronavirus update for today. Once again, more positive news. We talked to Dr. Eastman yesterday, our model expert. Things are looking better. Still got to be careful, though. COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 10,409 newly reported cases, 48 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now 11,682. Now, I want to go back to that 10,409. It was 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we were having 10,000 new cases a day. That is, this update includes the data for the 72-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Monday. So these are 3 days' worth of numbers. And it's only 10,409. Now, those other numbers were inflated because apparently there was some backlog on tests that were getting in there. But it's still, this is dramatically a lot less people being diagnosed as sick, which is a good thing. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a 7-day rolling average is once again down again, 14.9%, which is considering where it was. It's almost a full, it is a full 10 points down where it was on January 21st. That's good. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus. So, some good news there. Through February 7th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,164. Another number down from 1,239 reported on February 4th. Of those hospitalized, 178 people are in intensive care. That's down from 199. And 986 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,040. We are down below 1,000 people in non-ICU care. Thank God. The 178 ICU admissions are the fewest in Minnesota since September 7th, having been as high as 378 on December 16th, 200 higher. 200 more people in ICUs. Wow. The 986 non-ICU admissions is the fewest since November 13th. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 64 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state, up from 44 February 4. The 13 pediatric ICU beds available, which is actually down from 27. As of February 6th, the state reported that 3,858,044 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,616,925 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,083,058 third dose booster shots. I said this with Liz Olson. I said this yesterday with Liz Bolden. Your angels, nurses, your angels, doctors, your angels. You're absolutely brilliant people. I know, and you are not getting nearly the love that you deserve. And this has been god awful. And here you are, and you stood, and you helped us, and you took care of us. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. From the bottom of our heart, thank you very much. We really do appreciate all you have done. And I don't know how we can – well, let's make sure you get more money. And how about some paid time off? And you know, how about some bonuses? How about we do that? I know I can, you know, spend easy with other people's money, but you know what? You guys deserve it. You guys absolutely do deserve it. 952-946-6205. Once again, AM 950 Wordle goes on until the next hour. You have another hour to get in your entries for AM 950 Wordle. Just call Patrick and 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Get your word in, and it can be any length of word, but it has to have the letters G, Z, and L in that order in the word, okay? You have to have all three of them in that order in the word. All the people that get in, you'll enter into a drawing. We'll pick one of you to get an AM 950 calendar at the end of the show. Good luck. Once again, G as in golf, Z as in zebra, L as in Lima. Those are the three letters. You have to have them in order. We already have one of them. We talked about that a little bit earlier, as well as the other two. There's two more words that come to my mind really quick there. We'll get back to that coming up. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Brett Johnson, Patrick here on a Tuesday. Brett, have you heard of the AM 950 Wordle letters for today?
I have not heard the letters, no.
It does. Gazelka does work today.
Ugh. Oh, did you do this on purpose?
No, so? I did not. Grizzled works too, but I mean, I don't necessarily give away too much. Grizzled Gazelka. Yeah. Apples, oranges. G as in golf, Z as in zebra, L as in Lima.
Oh, man, you got a tough one with that Z in there.
That Z is in there. G, Z, L can be any length of word, but the letters G, Z, and L have to be in it, and they have to be in order. If you've got a word, you can call Patrick at 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Get your answer in. And also, you can go put an answer in on the live streams. Of course, at Facebook, go to AM 950 Radio on Facebook, as well as Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. You can get your entries in there. All the entries we get by the end of the show, we'll randomly pick one, and that person will get themselves an AM 950 calendar. So there you go. There were five words I could game up with, GZ.
I'm only at two right now, and that's including Gazelka, as I'm trying to think through some.
Gazelka's not a real word, is it?
Yeah, apparently. Well, you said names and cities don't qualify.
Well,
right?
All right, we're going to make them qualify. With this, it's just too perfect. I didn't even cross my mind until all of a sudden. Oh, man, that's right.
Next time you do one with an L, like Mike Lindell is going to work in there as a word unintentionally.
I am going to do that. I'm going. We've got 2 weeks of doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
We got 2 weeks. I might get a Lindell day.
L N D. Yeah, there you go.
I'm not going to be that easy. I don't want to go with the joke I just said. I'm not going to go with the joke I just said. All right. So let me ask you something. You know of these snowmobile tours that go on out, right? They're out in outstate. The Vikings do one and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're roaming bars, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are. I mean, it's like all the people get on there and it's lots of drinking. And they go bar to bar, site to site, drink and drink. and off they go, right?
Well, snowmobiles don't count as cars. I'm sure that's what the logic is there.
We're only moving fast. A car would actually have some safety measures on it.
Yeah, I think you'd be a lot safer. Not saying anyone should do this, but I think you would be a lot safer driving a car inebriated than a snowmobile. But you shouldn't do either of them.
No, you shouldn't. Don't drink and drive, kids? And those, when we say kids, we're talking to two Republican state senators. Two Minnesota state senators involved in a snowmobile crash that seriously injured one of them on Friday reported that they had not used alcohol or drugs prior to the accident, according to an incident report provided by Morrison County. According to Morrison County Sheriff's Office, Senators John Jasinski, the Republican from Faribault, and Mark Johnson, the Republican from East Grand Forks, were riding in a group on a marked snowmobile trail near Motley when they approached a 90-degree left turn. Jasinski entered the turn at a speed to cause him to be thrown from his machine, causing injuries. The report said Johnson, who was riding behind Jasinski, then collided with Jasinski's snowmobile, according to the report. There was a report out here. I saw a different report that said they were going only 10 miles an hour. So you hit a 90-degree turn at 10 miles an hour, and you got thrown off your snowmobile? I'm not the greatest snowmobile in the world, but I know at 10 miles an hour, you should be able to make any turn you want to. Yeah. It's not going exactly fast.
You'd be more falling off than thrown off, if anything, if you do, yes.
Exactly. Brett said exactly what – if you've fallen off a snowmobile at 10 miles an hour, that's not the snowmobile. Okay. No. Either you've driven someplace you shouldn't have gone with the snowmobile, or you've had a drink or two, because that's what kind of does happen. Both men were traveling at 10 miles an hour, according to the incident report from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, which should be your first suspicion. Neither reported using drugs or alcohol. No chemical testing was done, according to the Morrison County Sheriff's Office. Both senators in a statement on Monday said they were attending the Minnesota United Snowmobiles Association Winter Rendezvous. Glug, glug, glug. And according to the organization's website, took place February 3rd to 6th at Cragen's Resort in Brainerd. Now, first of all, from everyone here, as much as you guys think, oh, you don't like us. Jasinski, I hope you heal, dude. It sounds like that was a bad accident. I'm not saying you guys were drunk. I don't know. As a matter of fact, the way you would know is having a field sobriety test or, blood or urine sample to tell. You're going 10 miles an hour. You were thrown hard enough off this to where you got damaged as bad as you are. And or the other guy was following that close behind at 10 miles an hour. He could not stop. Why didn't you do a drug or alcohol test on this? It screams. I mean, you and I just talking through this, and it's like, okay, this doesn't sound right.
Well, who's going 10 miles an hour on a snowmobile anyways? I mean, those guys are going way faster than that.
It sounds like it. And can I just say this about the Morrison County Sheriff? Are you telling me that if two Democratic state senators were in a motorcycle crash under the same circumstances, that you wouldn't have had a drug or alcohol test for them? I have a hard time believing, considering how quickly and justifiably you went after Hutch when he had his accident out in whatever county that was. It does to a point to me kind of like, okay, is this because they were Republicans that you did not drug and alcohol test them? Because it would seem to me that this is one of those prime cases where absolutely you should drug and alcohol test these guys. Because none of this, if they're going 10 miles an hour, that's a pretty serious accident for 10 freaking miles an hour. And how exactly did you not make a 90-degree turn at 10 miles an hour on a snowmobile?
None of this in this story really adds up to me.
It doesn't.
That's my opinion. I don't think this adds up. Starting with the fact that, they're going 10 miles an hour. I mean, and then, they can't make the turn going at that speed. Nothing adds up on this at all.
Just release your – why don't you release your credit card bills? Let us see where you spent money. Out there. That would be interesting to see. That might clear up some of this, but I'm flabbergasted, not so much with the senators, because that's what snowmobilers do.
Right.
I'm flabbergasted Morrison County Sheriff didn't do any more of a test on this.
You would think that would raise some red flags, everything in that story, yeah.
If liberal radio host Matt McNeil crashed a snowmobile at 10 miles an hour in Morrison County, Oh, I swear to God, they'd be pulling like gallons of blood out of me to try. Let's test for any kind of drug we can. You know, you need to pee in more cups. That's like the size of a barrel. Keep urinating. You know, I can see Morrison County Sheriff having a little bit more of a stricter standard with me than they seem to have with two senators. I'm curious. Just saying. I'm a little curious on how in the world you did not do an immediate field drug and alcohol test on these guys.
We're probably never going to know what actually happened because you can't obviously do a test now. So
thanks, Morrison County Sheriff. You did your job, didn't you? 952-946-6205. 952. I don't have any problem being a jerk. I'm just calling it as I see it here. Oh, by the way, coming up here. Oh, I'm going to make some friends in media in town here in just a little bit. I'm going to make some real good friends because I got some things that have been said that I am going to take issue with. Just – that's me, though. That's coming up here in a little bit. Right now, you yourself have got another one of these great interviews and obviously talking about something that a lot of people are talking about in regards to these no-knock warrants.
Yeah, we're going to be talking through no-knock warrant policies, what they're talking about in the legislature, then obviously what's happening in Minneapolis. I mean, as you've talked about many times, Jacob Fry said he banned no-knock warrants, and well, apparently that wasn't the case. So we'll be talking about that as well as some police body camera footage as well. There's a big dispute in terms of when you release that footage when the cops shoot someone. So that's what we're talking about.
And you're talking with?
Oh, Walker Orenstein, yes, of MinPost.com, indeed.
Walker and Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Right now we're joined by Walker Orenstein. He reports on the state legislature for MinPost and covers other Minnesota news as we are going to be talking about, well, something that of course has been in the news for the past week or so, and that is the police killing of Amir Locke, as there are questions now about the no-knock policy in not just Minneapolis, but the entire state, and then also what could happen with body cameras in light of what just happened. So Walker joins us now on the show to talk about all of these topics. Walker, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So what currently is Minneapolis's no-knock policy in light of what just happened with Amir Locke? Because I know Mayor Jacob Fry said he's going to issue a ban on no-knock warrants, but at least prior to Amir Locke getting killed, what was Minneapolis's policies on no-knock warrants?
Yeah, so prior to last week when the mayor announced a new policy, which he described sort of as a moratorium, and there are some exceptions, but prior to that, Minneapolis police had its first policy ever, like actually regulating, governing the use of no-knock search warrants in November of 2020. And so under that policy, officers had three options for searching a residence. The first is what's known as a knock and announce warrant. So that's sort of a situation where an officer goes up, they knock, they say, police, search warrant. They wait a reasonable amount of time, and generally they can't force their way into a building looking for evidence. And I know a professor from the University of St. Thomas's Law School told the city council yesterday that wait time is usually about 30 seconds. But under those new regulations, police can seek a no-knock warrant from a judge. The city usually refers to these sort of as unannounced entry search warrants. And so there's kind of the main option for police in most of these is that they have to announce themselves before entering a home, but not before opening a door or busting it down. So if you watch the video in the Locke case, officers, you know, use a key to open the door. And after that door is open is sort of when they announce themselves. So that's sort of the, I guess what I refer to as the middle tier of no knock warrants, for lack of a better term, since there's three tiers here that we're talking about. And lastly, officers under these search warrant regulations issued by Minneapolis can decide if announcing themselves would create an imminent threat of physical harm to someone, they can enter without any type of knock or announcement. And the city said at the time this was sort of necessary only in limited circumstances, like something like a hostage situation. So there was these three tiers, knock and announce, breach and then announce and enter, and no knock, no announcement. Those are sort of like the three options that police had under the previous policy.
So I know Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry announced that he is going to be banning most no knock warrants. So what's actually in his new policy that has been announced? Are there any changes from what the previous policy was?
Yeah, there are some changes. So, you know, what he says is officers can only execute a search warrant under the knock and announce option generally. That's sort of limiting away the breach and then announce kind of option. He still said in extremely dangerous circumstances, an officer can enter without an announcement. He gave a couple examples, hostage situation, extreme domestic violence is another thing he said. So there is sort of an exception to that rule, but he took away kind of that middle tier and said, you know, officers can only really execute a knock and announce warrant unless it's one of these situations they consider to be, you know, limited and extreme.
So while the no-knock warrant policy in the city of Minneapolis has been garnering lots of attention, let's zoom out a little bit and talk about the state policy on no-knock warrants. What currently is the state policy?
Well, the state generally has some laws, you know, guiding no-knock warrants, which are issued by judges. And I'll just talk over some of the changes that they made in the last legislative session. You know, they're already sort of you know, judges' discretion, and I will say that police will tell you judges have a high bar for granting these, although that's, you know, always open to debate over whether the bar is adequately placed in granting these. But that's what they said, is it's not just like, you know, a rubber stamp necessarily. But regardless, the state last year enacted some new requirements last year for police using no-knock search warrants. First of all, they banned cops from using them in cases tied to drugs meant for personal use. So it still could be like a drug case tied to like distribution or something like that, but a case for personal use, they can't use it for. They said no-knock raids have to be approved by at least two officers in management. So that could be like a chief or a supervisor designated by the chief and another supervisor. Legislators set new guidelines for what police officers have to include in an application to a judge for a no-knock search warrant. For example, they have to say why a knock and announce entry can't be used, or whether the warrant could be actually carried out in daylight hours versus sort of at nighttime or early in the morning. And actually, lastly, the law requires police departments to report information to the state on no-knock warrants that they both applied for and that they carried out. And they have to say, you know, were there fatalities or injuries, that sort of thing. And there's no central database for this information, really. And police departments really seem to vary widely in how much they use these. You know, last year when I was writing about this, I talked to a lot of different types of agencies, you know, sheriff's departments, police departments, drug task forces, that sort of thing. And it really does vary widely in how and why they are used. And I will say the first couple months of that data, we got some limited data from that. Today, actually, we're working on writing a story for tomorrow on, you know, what we kind of learned from that. And so we're still drawing some conclusions from that. And frankly, it's a limited amount of information. But, you know, drug cases seem to be quite common, weapons cases, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, but really there hadn't been any central clearinghouse for this sort of information. So legislators didn't really have a great understanding of, like, you know, what sort of is the standard usage across the state and who uses them and why and that sort of, you know, information.
Now, I know some changes are being proposed at the state legislature that have to do with these no-knock warrants, and there's a couple of different directions we can go. And let's start with this whole idea of the database that you were just bringing up a few moments ago, at least in some of these proposals that have been proposed at the state legislature. Are there any ideas in terms of trying to get that database running? Because I think it would be important to actually be able to access that information in terms of, yeah, who's actually being served these no-knock warrants, what's the result of these. Have we heard any talk about that from the state legislature with some of these proposed bills?
You know, they haven't weighed in on the database so much. I will say, you know, we got sent the data directly from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and it's early in the sense that legislators did require the state to issue a report every year on that information. So they do plan on sort of compiling that information themselves and sending it into a form to legislators, which will then theoretically be presented to the public. Usually those sorts of reports are released publicly. But what they said is usually they would do that after they actually accumulate a year's worth of data. So while they sent us the initial what they have, I think that report won't come out until there's a year's worth of data. So that aspect of it, I don't think legislators are as worried about it because they assume some of that data is coming down the road here. But, you know, it's possible that they might want or ask for more real-time data or additional data, but that so far hasn't been raised necessarily at the Capitol.
So as the legislature continues to debate what's going to happen with the future of no-knock warrants, it seems like the big area of contention are what would qualify as exceptions to being able to use these no-knock warrants. That seems to be the at least the big divide that we're hearing about from the state legislature are what actually qualifies for a scenario where you can use a no-knock warrant, because both Republicans and DFLers are open to restricting these no-knock warrants. It's more the case of, well, when can these be used and what are the exceptions, correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, Republicans have been careful about, key Republicans particularly, have been careful about, they haven't called for a complete and total ban. And initially, some Democrats did call for what they said was to be a statewide prohibition. But it's important to note that the bill released by House Democrats today didn't actually include that. They limited them significantly, but they also did have exceptions. So I think it will be important for the legislature to sort of figure out what kinds of exceptions that they want. And Republicans have said, you know, we think that these are necessary in some circumstances. So there could be a great divide. Honestly, that sort of specifics are still kind of playing out. I think that we will learn more about that in the days to come. For instance, the DFL legislators today, they released sort of what they expect the bill to do, but they didn't even have their bill policy language, like the specifics written out that would become law, released to the public yet. So really, we're kind of in the early stages. It's still possible that they disagree so much that nothing is done on no-knock warrants. It's very possible, but it seems like that there is bipartisan support to at least sort of examine if there are ways to change no-knock policy again this year.
Speaking with Walker Orenstein, he reports on the state legislature for MinnPost with a particular focus on covering issues affecting greater Minnesota. Also reports on Minnesota politics as well. Make sure you go to MinnPost.com for the latest with Walker's work. Another piece I know you wrote very recently has to do with, well, the legislative push for more body cameras and how it could hinge on how and when police are required to release footage to families. So I guess my first question, Walker, is that we often hear when police departments are talking about getting these body cameras is that cost has always been the big prohibiting factor in terms of getting these cameras. So I guess it's a two-part question. How many departments actually have these body cameras, and what are the costs of getting these cameras actually installed? I know there's been some estimates released, but talk through both of those in terms of how many departments actually have these and then the costs of trying to get these body cameras implemented as well.
Yeah, so here's kind of the data that I do have. Governor Tim Walz's administration estimates that there are 9,000 officers, roughly 9,000 officers in the state unequipped with body cameras. And they say it costs roughly $1,000 per officer each year to buy and to use them. So there's sort of ongoing costs. It's not just, you know, buying the cameras, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And there was a survey, recent survey released in July of 2021 by the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. And they found that a number of body cameras among police departments actually doubled in the last 5 years. So more and more departments are adopting these, but even so, they had 214 chiefs who responded and 95 said they still don't have the technology. And generally of those 95, I think it's greater than 50%. If I remember, it's about 65% said that cost was really the big, you know, issue here. And so it remains to be a really expensive thing. And I know, you know, there was a police shooting down in Austin, Minnesota, where officers killed a man down there in late December. And the Austin Police Department did not have body cameras. And I talked to the department there and they said, you know, it was a mixture of things. They do plan on adopting body cameras. Money is certainly a factor. Sort of making sure they have the right technology and the logistics surrounding implementing these sorts of things was a really big factor for them. But, you know, they've got to hire staff. They said they have to hire an assistant to do data work, you know, $80,000 or more per year. The initial equipment and infrastructure could be $160,000 per year. I mean, these are real costs for department. And they said they were initially just kind of hesitant to adopt these early because they worried, like, if they didn't work well, they weren't the right type, if they, you know, if police departments decided they weren't really helpful, you know, it could be a big expense for them. So they didn't really want to be an early adopter, as they put it. So they were kind of waiting back and learning to some extent. So now they do plan to adopt them, but they said more money from the state certainly could help. And, but yeah, for now that cost issue remains really big for a lot of police departments.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, there does seem to be some general agreement among members of the state legislature and even Governor Walz that the state should be helping pay for these body cameras. But in terms of trying to actually get a bill that would provide that funding passed, well, there is a sticking point, and that has to do with the disclosure and timing of footage from these body cams when you have a police-involved shooting. Talk a little bit about at least what the current law is in terms of releasing body cam footage when you do have a police-involved shooting, and at least what the divide is between the Republicans and the Democrats in the state legislature in terms of that timing on when footage could be released.
Yeah, so under state law, usually these kinds of body camera videos from incidents where police use deadly force are tied to an investigation, and you know, that's generally considered private while the investigation is ongoing. You know, police agencies can decide themselves that they should release the video if it will dispel rumors or quash unrest, promote public safety. There's sort of a broad exemption there. Like, hey, if you want to release this because you think it's going to stop this, you know, protest or whatever it is, you're allowed to do that. But it's sort of up to each agency. And, you know, a coworker of mine, Solomon Gustavo, wrote recently a story about how Minneapolis Health has been pretty inconsistent with releasing this footage. And, you know, the mother of Kobe Dimmock Heisler, a man with autism who was fatally shot in Brooklyn Center in August of 2019, his mother actually testified at the legislature that she didn't get to see the footage from her son's death until months later, really, 4 days after George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis. And so she felt like, you know, I don't want public pressure to be the only reason that this footage is released or not. And so Democrats have pushed, especially in the House. Democrats control the House, Republicans control the Senate. They last year wanted any police department that gets money through this grant program to have to allow families to view that footage within 48 hours. And there are some exceptions, and, you know, there's little complicating factors, but that was the general thrust of it. In most circumstances, within 48 hours, the family of somebody who was killed by police gets to watch the video. And, you know, police departments and Republicans both said that they worried that that would sort of interfere with the investigative process. You know, they have to the state has to interview people involved. As they're determining, you know, whether there should be any criminal charges in the case, that sort of issue. And so they said it takes a while to do that, and we can't have the body camera footage released until then. So this year, actually, House Democrats introduced another bill that has a 7-day timeline for families to view the police footage. And it also says, you know, if the chief of a department has a compelling reason to not release that footage, that they can do so, but that within 90 days it has to be released to the family. So there's kind of a two-part, you know, release mechanism there. It's a little too early to tell exactly what Republicans think of that. I know police groups still thought that the decision should be made either by local police departments on their policy for releasing footage, or they felt like the 7-day timeline was still too short. Republicans have talked about maybe letting some of these issues around body camera footage and disclosure of that footage be decided by a committee that has oversight over public records in Minnesota. And so they've wanted some more conversation around that. I will say that they last year said that they offered a 30-day window for that footage to be released to families. And they said House Democrats didn't go for that. So there's sort of this divide over it. And it's worth noting, Democrats last year wanted to apply that 48-hour window both broadly to all departments in one bill and specifically to departments getting money under these grants. And last year, in the end, at the end of the legislative session, the legislative leaders actually agreed to some money for these body cameras, and they put it in the bill that was passed around to reporters. You know, here's our final negotiated compromise bill, and there was money for this kind of grant program. But after sort of legislators realized the scope of the police accountability agreement, which they had been negotiating, they felt like they hadn't gotten enough, and they were frustrated with having money in there that did not have these regulations. So they actually pulled it back out of the bill. And so it didn't pass. So this has been a real divide on this issue. And if it doesn't get solved, then there'll probably still just be more police departments that don't have body cameras. It's kind of the upshot of it.
Yeah, so still lots more to do on that before a final bill could be put together that could provide funding, at least statewide, for some of these departments that do not yet have those police body cameras. We have been speaking with Walker Orenstein, who reports on the state legislature for MinnPost with a focus on covering issues affecting greater Minnesota, also covers Minnesota politics as well. Find all of his work over at MinnPost.com. Again, MinnPost.com. Walker, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, we do have AM 950 Wordle going on till the end of the show today. You just have to submit a word. There are more words than I thought there were with this, but GZL. They have to, the letter G as in golf, Z as in zebra, L as in Lima. They have to be in order in the word. But if you've got a word, submit it either by calling Patrick, 952-946-6205, or you can also submit it on the Facebook pages by going to AM 950 Radio on Facebook or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. There you go. 952-946-6205 as well for if you want to chime in on things today. Okay, so I want to There has been some criticism of the Southwest Light Rail Line. I have been very critical of the Southwest Light Rail Line with these new developments, with the extra money and the extra time that's needed. As a matter of fact, on Friday we had Cheryl Youakim, the representative from my representative, and she made the comment that I wanted to come back and address a little bit. She said, if you hire someone to renovate your house and you tear down a wall, sometimes you're surprised by what's behind there. And I said, well, only if you've hired someone really bad, because we hired a company that came out a few years ago that did some renovations on our house, and they did a magnificent job. And one of the first things they did was they wanted to determine what in the world was behind the walls. So they checked the paint, see if there was any lead paint. Well, there actually was a little lead paint on the house, just a little bit, but it was there, and a little asbestos on the tiles of all things. And they got rid of all that stuff, and they had to do a kind of specialized removal for all that stuff because they need to know what they're getting into. That's kind of what you do. And before they bid the project, before they tell you what it's going to be, they have to test all this stuff, and they're very clear about that. When you bid a project on a magnitude of the Southwest Light Rail Line, and you know you have to build a long tunnel, a half-mile tunnel in the Kenilworth neighborhood, one of the things I've been very critical of is that you should do a soil analysis. Why didn't you guys do a soil analysis? And also, there were very specific rules in regards to how the tunnel could be dug. It had to be done in a very specific way. And it seems like what has happened here, at least this is what it seems like, is the contractor didn't do a proper soil analysis, didn't take into account the kind of more costly way to dig the tunnel. They got the contract, and now it's basically like, well, now if you want us to do it as we're supposed to, we've really got to have more money. Well, then you shouldn't have bid on the contract. Or at least you should have bid more. I mean, I think that's the problem I have, is you bid on the contract knowing what you had to do, and if you didn't do your due diligence on what you had to do, well, whose fault is that? And I've said very clearly a few times as well, when it comes to the tunnel, you know, taking what it was going to be, 8 years to build the tunnel, 8 years, it took you three to build the Lowry Hill Tunnel. That's six lanes wide underneath one of the more prestigious parts of the city. And that's not a half mile, but that's like a quarter mile, I think, at least. It took you 3 years to build the Lowry Hill Tunnel, and it's going to take you 8 years to build one light rail tunnel that's a half mile long. Okay. I've been very critical. But if I may, there seems to be a lot of sports guys that want to chime in on this as, I'm outraged. Oh, I'm outraged. Look at the cost of this. I'm outraged. Outside of one exception, can I just say to all these sports radio hosts, sports writers, all the guys in sports, shut up. Shut up. Now, the one exception I'll make is Patrick Royce. And the reason why I say Patrick Royce, who I think is an exceptional sports guy, the reason why I omit him from the list is because he was the only sports guy who dared to point out, God, that's a lot of money for a Viking stadium. Not a bad Royce impression, by the way. Yeah, there you go. He was the only sports guy in town who said, before the money was approved, that's a lot of money. You know what most of the rest of the sports guys did in this town? Kido, that's family. That's blood. You can't let them. Our city will be worth nothing if not for the Vikings. This is about city pride. It's about pride in your community. So we spent basically $2 billion to build a stadium for a billionaire. For a crap team. How much city pride you got in that crap fest over there? Holy God. Is that an embarrassment? And we paid tons of money for it. A stadium that 97% of the metro area can't afford to go to. Dear God, go take a look at the price of the tickets out there. You know, maybe when they were first originally for sale, but the scalpers all gobbled them all up. And now to get anywhere in the stadium is $150 and get to ready to enjoy that $20 beer. My God. The vast majority of Minnesotans can't afford to go to that stadium. Plus, if I can point out, that stadium it's not finished. You guys have been constantly building on it because of design flaws and design errors. Who's paying that money? Don't feign outrage about the Southwest Light Rail Line if you were for a far less usable by the community football stadium. Sweet Jesus. And I get it. Sports guy, I get it. The reason why you want it, you like it. You get to go into you get to go hang out with your friends and you get to talk about, I was talking to Adam Thielen the other day. I was talking to Kirk Cousins the other day. And they're all like, wow. You love that. You love the freebies. You love the jerseys and the bobbleheads and all that stuff. I get it. You love all that stuff. But then just, you either are for massive taxpayer spending on civic projects or you're not. Don't try to split hairs and act like, well, the Viking Stadium was good, even though most people can't use it. But a light rail line, oh, how dare you? Come on. Now, I will say this. Apparently, there's a condo nearby. The work on the light rail line has led to cracking walls and floors near the Calhoun Isles condominium towers. Now, are they sure it's the light rail line? I'm going to guess it is. We had here, I mean, the light rail line's actually going to come by the radio station out in Eden Prairie here by the broadcasting complex. When they were digging the poles, the foundation poles, we were getting the bangs in the studio here. We actually could hear it. I don't know if it did or not. It sounds like they are. The cracks were discovered by residents in the hallways and common areas between the 3rd and 10th floors of the condo towers, leading to a memo sent by the Southwest Community Outreach Coordinator Dave Davis on the Calhoun Isles Association. Residents observed separation of the carpet tiles and separation between the walls and ceiling. That's not good. But once again, I think this is what's happening here is they basically bid to do the quick, you know, loud, obnoxious building, and they have not taken into account they can't do it that way. And so now all of a sudden they're coming hat in hand saying, if we're going to do it right, we got to actually get more money. And the Met Council doesn't seem to be on our side. The next segment, courtesy of Brett. Brett came up with this name, and this is just top notch. Rip Minneapolis to the max. It's this next segment. Now, I am actually going to call out a fellow broadcaster in this town. Because I don't quite know what you're doing, dude, but you really seem off base here. I'll get to that. Mike Max, longtime Minnesota sports anchor and reporter who's won praise for his on-the-ground coverage of the civil unrest following the police killing of George Floyd, called Minneapolis a hellhole that sucks the life out of you. It seems like we've become a garbage dump where the only national headlines are those that make us look worse, said Max. We played two national games on national TV. One's the Winter Classic with six below. The other one's a soccer game against Honduras, and no one understands why it's here. And you say, that's about the only publicity we've had for the city the last several months, either a shooting or that, and you're right. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. Okay, first of all, a lot of people said Minneapolis looked great on the Winter Classic game. As far as the soccer game, we've talked about it. We did free some Hondurans, but at the same time, that's America. They don't have any problem playing us and Azteca Stadium in the middle of the afternoon on the hottest day of the year. That never is a problem. They can come in Minnesota, United States, and Canada. We got cold weather. They can come up and play outdoors with us. But those two things, even if those two things went horribly wrong, which they didn't, they were sold out and they got a lot of praise. The city's got a lot of praise. And by the way, the soccer match was not held in Minneapolis. That was actually in the Midway in St. Paul. But, splitting hairs, I guess. I think that your outrage factor, if you're just outraged about the sports, but then you say, and then the shootings, you kind of seem a little bit, kind of a gauge there. Max referenced police stopping a person for jumping on the top of the Hilton Hotel last week and only to have SWAT fatally shoot a 22-year-old Mayor Locke while executing a no-knock search warrant 2 days later. He then got called out by his, one of the other hosts on his station, and he says, I'll tell you exactly how I'm helping. I don't want people to think it's safe to come down by themselves on a Saturday night. Whoa. Mike, when has it been okay and safe in this town to go by yourself into downtown Minneapolis on a Saturday night? Seriously, dude. No, you need to. You think that people were just rolling down the streets wearing, hoop skirts and carrying umbrellas 3 or 4 decades ago? No, 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 no. Minneapolis is always, downtown Minneapolis has always been rough. As a matter of fact, it generally has, it's probably the nicest it's been down there because of all the residents that have moved back in. Do you know when they had to clear out block after block after block of Skid Row on the Skid Row project because it was all flop houses and cheap bars? My God, it was a mess. Minneapolis was a mess for years. Probably the last time it was safe to be out on a Saturday night by yourself in Minneapolis, the 1860s? Maybe? So I don't know what the hell he thinks that people are just strolling downtown by themselves on a Saturday night. I'm a big guy. I wouldn't go downtown by myself on a Saturday night. You're crazy, man. That's just stupid. I don't even know what the hell is what is that? I don't know. I don't want people to experience some of the stuff that I've experienced over the last few years. There's nothing you can get downtown that you can't get somewhere else in a safer environment. Okay, stop there again. Mike, your station covers the Timberwolves. They don't play anywhere else but downtown, as well as the Twins and the Vikings. I don't know if you've heard of them. You are a sports guy, right? They're downtown. The Guthrie Theater, the Walker Art Museum, the MIA, which is a little south of the downtown, but still in the downtown region, I guess you could say. They're all in Minneapolis. You can't get those anywhere else. There's a lot of great restaurants and bars in downtown Minneapolis where they are there. And no, Applebee's is not an equivalent choice, Mike, out in the third ring suburbs. So I don't know what you're doing here, and part of me says, was this a sweeps month stunt? Is this him and his radio station coming up with a stunt, which is really stupid? Because if this is a stunt, then you're calling out the city that you yourself, your radio station, has tried to infuse yourself into the foundation of. So I don't know if it is or not. Mike, if this is just your arrogance, I mean, it's one of two things. It's either you are just trying to push Republican talking points, or two, you are far more arrogant than I ever dreamed. If you're trying to push Republican talking points, screw you, the hell with you, okay? I have no problem saying that. Dude, do you think that people, the city of Minneapolis, all the restaurants, oh my God, Mike Max is angry at us? Oh, we got to fix this because Mike Max is angry at us. Oh, shut up, dude. No one cares. You're just bad-mouthing the city. No one, you know, no one is going to fall all over themselves to try to impress you, dude. The other thing, if I may say so, if I may be so bold, you're no Cedric Adams. And I know, for me to call you out on that is kind of ludicrous. Although he was my great uncle. Not a joke. Funny story. My great uncle is Cedric Adams. He is. Used to be an institution over that radio station. So did Cannon and many of the people. Dave Lee, great, fantastic broadcaster. Wonderful broadcaster. You guys have a litany of history there. Dude, you're not like that. I can tell you right now, none of those guys would have ever said anything so stupid and arrogant as you on this. If you are doing this because you just don't like it, the doors in any freaking direction you want to go, my friend. Off you go. Get the hell out of my city. Because you know what? I love Minneapolis. I absolutely do. And I know you're going to come on now. It's like, well, I love the city too. I was just, screw you. You are a self-centered, self-righteous jackass. If you just think that Mike Max is going to call this out. You don't like it here. Get the hell out. I love this town, and there's a lot of things in downtown Minneapolis you can't find anywhere else. So I'm sorry that the city doesn't cater to your needs, Mike. But this is pathetic. And like I said, I mean, it takes a pretty arrogant guy who does sports, who's on a station that carries the Timberwolves, to argue there is nothing in the downtown you need. Oh, I'm sure the Vikings, the Twins, and the T-Wolves are all going to be really happy you're telling everyone to go away. Good thinking, sports guy. Dear God, what a fool. I have no patience for him. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. We'll get our winner on AM 950 Wordle when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Julie in Minneapolis, you're on hold. I'll quickly allow you to jump on in here. Julie, thank you very much.
Point. I'm kind of a radio nerd. I used to just listen exclusively to sports, but I'm very well acquainted with Mike Max as a radio host. He is a, for sure, every day pounding on how great the Republicans are. He's totally a far-right guy. He always has a reason to hate Minneapolis. Before the crime spike, he would complain that the city gave him too many tickets and basically was saying, you know, I'm an important man. I got things to do downtown. And No. I'm actually serious. And when they were redoing the Nicollet Mall, you know, for years, he was attacking the city for that.
Okay.
And how incompetent they
were. I gotta jump in on you because I'm at the end of the show. Dude. All right. Sure. The Hennepin History Museum or the Minnesota Historical Society or PAVIC Museum, they might do a little thing on you, dude. No one cares. No one is – you're an old guy in a photo after a while. No, you didn't change anything. No one's day was brighter when you came along. Dude, just get over yourself and realize you owe a lot more to the city of Minneapolis than the city of Minneapolis ever owed to you. And you clearly think that the city of Minneapolis, you know, is only exists because Mike Max showed up. Dear Lord, if that's any of that's true, dear Lord, what a delusional clown. All right. So we had AM 950 Wordle for today. Second day we've done this. We've gotten a lot of entries. Okay, so Patrick, here are the words I came with: gazelle, grizzle, guzzle, grizzled, guzzled. I had grizzly. Gazillion came in. Those are great ones. And so there are multiple words. And someone brought in gazelka. Jeez. Someone brought in gazelka. We've thank you very much for all the entries. We have randomly picked one. Patrick, who is our winner today?
It is Daniel. Daniel came in with grizzle this afternoon.
Grizzle. There you are. And thank you very much. Appreciate it. Guess what? We're doing this for the next 3 days this week and then all next week as well. So make sure you get your entries in. Another AM 950 Wordle Day tomorrow. I look forward to having you. And then look forward to the entries. I'm enjoying this. I don't have any problem admitting when we're doing sweeps month hacks. And we'll steal anyone's idea and we'll run with it. That's what we do. I'm not going to act like, oh, thank God I'm here. Oh, please. Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.